Hi, gang. This is Lesbian Nation. Last week, for those of you who are listening, we had the first part of a two-part interview with Esther Newton, an anthropologist, on the subject of matriarchy. Tonight, we're going to have the second part of that interview. And at the end of the program, I'm going to have some really important announcements for you. So I'm going to give you plenty of time to get pencil and paper ready. Well, here's Dr. Newton. We were talking last time about Jane Alpert's paper on matriarchy, and that's kind of where we left off.
Well, I think Jane's paper, I don't know why I say Jane, because I've never met her, but I felt sort of close to her reading that paper. It's certainly not a well-worked-out theory, but it's sort of a flash. It's an interesting idea. I found it very interesting. I thought... She mentioned in the beginning biology, and I thought she was going to build up her theory of matriarchy more on biology, not so much on motherhood, per se, because it's a little hard for me to imagine that motherhood in itself could be the basis of revolutionary change. She's careful to define it as a kind of mystical revolutionary change, I mean, including both economic and spiritual change. I mean, for one thing, conditions really demand fewer children now at this point. I mean, I see a somewhat declining emphasis overall on motherhood, or at least on producing children. So that's a real problem. I thought she was going to build it more on the biology, because certainly that's what, I mean, not every woman is a mother. Every woman shares biology. I can't elevate this to the level of a scientific theory, and I think in times of tremendous social upheaval and so on, which is what we're going through now, intellectual, emotional, economic, you know, political, you name it, right across the board, I think it's very difficult to formulate, you know, real classy, finished-sounding theories. What's happening is that people are groping for new models or new paradigms, and I really respect Jane Alpert's paper for that. I don't know what to say other than that I have an intuition. I feel that women are very different from men in some fundamental way, and I feel that that's related to two things. One, obviously, is our shared experience as oppressed, and I think while that varies very much according to class, according to race, according to maybe geography even, according to whether you're straight or gay, there's a core of that that women definitely share, just from having been oppressed as women. The other thing is, there's a strong possibility to me that men and women are really quite different, and would be, even if, you know, women were not so oppressed as we are. And an interesting thing is that Boren paper that I referred to earlier, that sort of, in many ways, comes out of a conservative anthropological tradition. They examine the evidence, you know, are men and women different? And they reject all the things that have shown that, you know, women aren't as bright, or they can't do math and this kind of thing, as culturally determined. But they say, well, there's pretty good evidence that men are innately more aggressive than women, which I thought was really interesting. Here are these, you know, pretty conservative women coming out with this statement. In fact, it may be that more conservative women along some dimension are more attuned to this difference, if there is a difference, than more, quote, radical women. Because if you look at Kate Millett's book, for instance, that which was a huge breakthrough and a very valuable book in many, many, many ways, she felt that her position was that men and women basically are totally the same, you know, and that why have we been oppressed? This is bull, you know. Cut out the oppression. We're just as good as you are. We're just the same as you are. And when I was reading it, Sexual Politics, I objected to that. I thought, I don't want to see society of the future where men and women are interchangeable. I don't think men and women are interchangeable. Certainly in my experience, they're not interchangeable. And I want to see a society where those differences are recognized and where our uniqueness as women, our strong points, have equal or more weight in terms of power, in terms of the thing I talked about earlier, the ideology of the culture. And Shulamith Firestone, as Alpert points out, took the same position that although Firestone said men and women could be the same if only we eliminated women's biology, is really what she said. And I've used that book a lot in classes, for instance. And many women say, I want to still be able to have children. I don't want to. Yeah, okay, maybe childbirth is painful, so on. But I don't buy a solution to women's oppression, which means the elimination, total elimination of women's biology.
In a sense, that would be the elimination of woman as a distinct entity. I don't want to be sort of, if I can't bear children, I don't have no intention of bearing children, I have no desire to. But to eliminate that, to say, well, you know, that's got to be cut out, you know, tubes tied or whatever, is to basically make me a mutilated woman, but not a man.
Yes. Yeah. Well, what are they going to do to men to, you know, tone them down? I don't know. I mean, all I can say is I had a sort of gut reaction against that, even though I don't enjoy all the aspects of my biology. I mean, I sometimes think it's a drag. Nevertheless, I don't want to become somehow a streamlined woman or a stripped-down woman or something like that. I do have some kind of feeling that women are different and that the difference comes partly from our biology.
Well, I remember once when I was making a speech in Arizona, a young man raised his hand and said, well, aren't women handicapped in terms of equality by having to bear children? And I said, if you consider the reproduction of the human race as a handicap, maybe you're right, but that is the vital necessary work of society, and we're equipped to do it.
Right. Well, realistically, given the way society is set up now and, you know, where power is located and so on, it certainly is a handicap. I don't want to see the women eliminated as women as the solution. And I think that's what Firestone's work and Millett's work implies. Now, and Alpert really deals with that. She says, well, this was the antithesis to the sexist idea that women's biology is a handicap. So then you say, okay, let's eliminate women's biology, or pretend it doesn't exist, which is what Kate did.
Well, right now, the way the society is organized, precedence is given to certain kinds of work, and everything else is ranked as secondary. Well, in this country, for instance, the military gets priority. Just look at the national budget.
Right.
And everything else is secondary to that particular function or to, say, industrial production, certain kinds of industrial production. And everybody else's work has to be organized in such a way that it doesn't interfere with military and industrial production. Now, supposing the world were organized so that everything had to be organized secondary to the production, a regulated production, I might add, not the just popping out kids like donuts, a regulated production and caring for children. It would be a very different kind of world. I'm not sure I'd be completely happy in it. But it's certainly a very different concept.
Yeah, it's a different concept. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. For one thing, this doesn't relate directly to what you said, but I'm not attracted by those visions of utopia which are a-technical. I mean, which sort of, let's go back to baking bread and living off the land and so on and so forth. I love my car. I think it's wonderful. And I like certain kinds of modern conveniences. I mean, aside from the fact that I like them, I think they have a tremendous freeing, technology has a tremendous freeing potential for women and for people in general, but for women. So any kind of matriarchy that I would like to imagine has a very advanced technology as its base. And that would make the maintenance and production of that technology important. I think it's very important for women to get into science, get into technology.
But you see, if this technology were at the service of the production and rearing of happy people,
Oh, well, yes. Well, I mean, that would be wonderful. The question is, how is that to come about? You know, it depends what day I'm thinking about it, because some days I think the human race doesn't really deserve to continue, and that we men, more than we, have raped the planet, and, you know, I think, well, okay, extermination, so what, in the total cosmic scheme? But other days, certainly if anything is going to save this planet, women are going to be in the forefront of it. I feel that, and I think the values, and again, this is why I think Alpert's paper is really a very interesting one, that I think the values that most or many women have are important values, and if they can be articulated and have political muscle in back of them, that they have the potential to be tremendously constructive.
We then got back to Elizabeth Gould Davis.
And I wanted to say something about her. I mean, it's out in paperback now. It's cheap, and people can read it, and it's a very interesting book. Paul and I got into a lot of trouble because of Elizabeth Gould Davis. In our paper, we wanted to look at her ideas seriously. Not so much in terms of, is her reconstruction of history true or false, because I don't think that can be proved. But in terms of the lines along which she was thinking, which were very unorthodox. And after we read this paper at a convention, an anthropology convention, and after we had read it, a woman came up to us who was doing an anthropology collection, a collection of anthropology about women, and she said, oh, I loved your paper, and it was wonderful, and this and that, and want to put it in the collection. So Paul and I said, okay. We sent her the paper. A little while later, this woman wrote back and said, I showed your paper to my male editor at this press, and he flipped out. He said it was the most unscientific, trash, couldn't be in the book, and so on and so forth. And we said, well, what particularly was it? And she said, well, it's the fact that you gave so much space to Elizabeth Gould Davis. And then, it's a long story, then this woman really finked out and said, well, I don't know, and maybe your paper isn't so good after all, and so on and so forth. But that was the real sticking point, was Elizabeth Gould Davis, because the excuses were, she's not methodologically sound, so on and so forth, all of which was true. That's true. But what we were saying was, okay, her reconstruction of history is true, it's not methodologically sound, it's very far out, probably a lot of it's wrong and so on, but let's look at the conception. They didn't want us to look at the conception. They didn't want us to look at it and say, let's consider this idea. But they wanted us to say, if we mentioned her at all, they wanted us to say, what a bunch of hokum. Who ever heard of such nonsense? Well, you can see the same process at work within the revolutionary, quote, left. Get down, you know, guns, Marx, Che Guevara, whatever it is, women's ideas, you know, dismissed as bull, unless it fits within the traditional confines of what is possible. The realm of the possible, what it's possible to think, what it's possible to do, so on and so on. And those are, whether you look in the radical left, whether you look in the academic world, etc., those are male ideas. Now, I don't think, I guess what started me on this was thinking about women intellectuals or women revolutionaries. Some of those ideas that we've been handed down from the male left, from the male academic world, whatever, are going to turn out to be valuable ideas, ones that we can use, like technology. They're going to turn out to be skills, knowledge that we can use. And some of them are going to turn out to be very oppressive things that have been holding us back and that we, you know, really want to get rid of, limitations in our thinking. And I guess I see as a lifelong struggle sifting those things out. Which parts of those things do I, you know, reject, those limitations that have nothing to do with me and the kind of society I would like to see, and which parts are skills that I can really build on? And I see women doing that, you know, all over the place, in all kinds of areas, which is great. I guess I had a grudge against this editor, this male editor, who said, you know, that our paper should be rejected because we shouldn't consider Elizabeth Gould Davis. I mean, that was a real political issue. What's going to produce change is not the fact that an individual woman or even a small group of women are willing to be violent at this point. What's going to produce change is women learning how to organize and work together politically for their own interests. All of us are so overburdened with the male models, which is all we have to go by. A female revolutionary may look different from a male revolutionary. You know, it might be a totally different thing. I think it's a little too early to say. I think we have to, get on with our business of building feminist culture and doing feminist research and helping each other to organize, through unions and when possible and in whatever other ways, and kind of see what emerges. I think it's really... I've reconciled myself to the idea that this is going to be a lifelong thing for us and that we're just at the beginning. I mean, this is a life commitment, right?
Yeah.
We're relatively young people and go on, hopefully we go on after our lives. It's not going to take place tomorrow. So I think we're all sort of settling in for the long haul. Or don't you have that feeling?
Oh, very much so. I think I accepted that idea a long time ago. I expect that when I've got white hair, if I take good care of myself, I'll be running around spray painting Little Old Ladies Unite, over whatever male power centers there are.
Yeah. I just think it's going to take a long time, and that's why I think things like Elizabeth Gould Davis, Alpert, these ideas sound very far out. Jane Alpert's paper sounds really weird in a certain kind of way. What do you mean? What good revolutionary is espousing people reading tarot cards, or thinking or believing in astrology? And so, sounds weird. And yet, I think we should try to be as open as possible. Of course, I have certainly fights with women, other academic women in this respect. But I think we really need to open up our heads, and we're looking for new models of thinking about the past, thinking about the future, what kind of revolution, what kind of society. And we are really enslaved by these male models. And even the whole left in America has been enslaved by a Marxist model, which doesn't...
By a combination of Che Guevara and Abby Hoffman.
Right. So, we really... it's really, rather than sticking hard and fast to some handed down, you know, or somebody else's line, I think we need to be as open as possible, sort of just, you know, rattle your head around. And Paula and I tried to talk about this in our paper. That is there only one kind of power? And, I mean, this is what the realists always say. Come on, you know, don't give me this spiritual stuff, or don't give me this women are different from men. Power is power. In order, it has certain rules, and you become a certain way in the pursuit of it, and so on. Well, I don't know. The paper says more about it than I could say now, but we can't just go on with this same old stuff that we've had before. Women in the United States, women particularly, we are on the forefront. I mean, we are, certainly middle-class women, upper-class women, are the most privileged women in the world in a certain kind of way. We're in a position...
Do you have the breathing space?
We have the breathing space, yes, in a way. And I think at least we're on the frontier. That's what I mean to say. And there's no reason why other women in other cultures have to go through the same kinds of processes in order to get where we are that we have. It's like underdeveloped countries. Why should they go through some kind of brutal industrialization period like our country did? I mean, they might as well go right to TV, you know, and electronics and miniaturization. Why go through the intermediate stages? Women in this country are on the frontier, and we have a responsibility to really open ourselves to new models, to new possible models of thinking about women's role, women's past, women's revolution, and so on and so forth. I mean, I can see that in talking with women in other countries, even other advanced countries, developed countries. We're so far ahead of where their thinking is. I mean, so much more daring. And I think that's real important. We have to take that into account, not just fall into this revolutionist Che Guevara. Because that's not even true for us, obviously.
I think that the individualism, I'm not talking about the concept of rugged individualism, because that's so much tied into the concept of a work concept. I'm thinking of individualism in terms of the extent of civil liberties, the freedom of the press, which is greater here than anywhere else, and the possibility of being even more eccentric, I think, than the English allow.
Well, I think, yeah. Again, I say I know what you're talking about. I haven't sat down and thought about why, you know, how much of that comes out of our tradition and how much of it comes out of the fact that society is falling apart. And that leaves a lot of space. I mean, it's very constructive in a certain kind of way. The unit which in the past has been the most oppressive to women of all classes and races, by and large, is the family unit. And although we also got strength from that, I mean, it used to be you could be respected for having 10 children kind of thing, but at the same time, women's lives were pretty much confined within that. Well, that family unit is in a lot of trouble in this country, whereas if you go to France, for instance, it's still much more solid there. And that's a great thing for women. That's a wonderful thing for women. I mean, throughout the last thousands of years of history, women have been confined in kinship groups and family groups, and still are in many societies. And the fact that that's falling apart is painful, difficult, leaves women in a very isolated position, nevertheless opens up new possibilities.
Another thing that I think contributes to that is the wealth that is even possible to poor women in this country. And by that I mean, okay, as a person of very limited means, I have been able to live in my own apartment with a lot of conveniences that, say, a person of middle income doesn't have in Europe, have space, time, and privacy that doesn't exist in any of the other Western developed countries, as a single woman with very little money.
Right. Well, it's all part of that thing of opening up new possibilities. I don't want us to sound like, you know, I mean, we're sort of beginning to get into this rah-rah America is wonderful or something. And
I was just thinking of it, you know, I don't leave space. That's
yeah,
all.
Right. But it does, in fact, leave space. I mean, this is tremendously exciting, what's going on in so many levels of the society, not because the government is wonderful or anything like that, you know, but because the chaos and the failure of legitimacy, you know, Watergate and so on and so forth, does leave a tremendous, leaves people sort of sitting there saying, well, what next? Instead of having the next step planned out. And I think that's very good.
That was Esther Newton. And now I've got some announcements for you that I promised you at the beginning of the program. The first one is that Gay Pride, for those of you who like listening to the programming produced by gay producers around here and have wondered where Gay Pride disappeared to, is now scheduled on Thursdays at 10:15 p.m. and is rebroadcast Fridays at 1:30 p.m. On Thursday, November 1st, starting at about 7:30, there is going to be a meeting of a new organization called the Gay Women's Alternative. It's for women over 30, and you are promised intellectual and social stimulation, as well as possibly some other kind if you're lucky, like mainly refreshments, wine and cheese. That's a promise. This is at the Universalist Church, 4 West 76th Street. And that's November 1st, around, say, 8 o'clock in the evening, and there's a $3 contribution. Before that, I believe this Friday there's going to be a dance at the Firehouse at 99 Wooster Street, run by Lesbian Feminist Liberation, starting around the usual time, 9 o'clock. And on Saturday, October 20th, from noon to 5 p.m. at West 25th Street between 8th and 9th Avenue, there's going to be a film and video festival. It's a block party benefit for a group called Women Make Movies. I'll read the press release to you. Women Make Movies highlights feminist activity in a festive day of neighborhood entertainment. The Chelsea Infants of Martial Arts, ages 3 to 13, will lead a parade through the neighborhood and demonstrate their karate skills at the opening of the day's events. Vivica Lindfors will perform poems, songs, scenes, and conversations from her play, I Am a Woman. The raffle drawing, with a Jack Belander etching as the first prize, will take place at 3:30 p.m. Movies made by women at Chelsea Picture Station and a surprise feature film will be presented late in the day. The Sidewalk Cafe and Cabaret will feature neighborhood talent, a continuous series of songs and acts to be videotaped by a Chelsea Picture Station crew. Several cakewalks, a specialty of Oklahoma fairs, will take place throughout the afternoon in addition to a continuous bake sale. Oh, my diet. An array of many different booths will be set up throughout the festivities, including a white elephant sale, face painting, sale of homemade Halloween masks, the Chelsea Neighborhood Clinic, Fulton Center for Senior Citizens, photo buttons, and your choice to be one of several different feminists. I guess that means I get to be Gloria Steinem or something. Women Make Movies is tax-exempt, nonprofit. The proceeds will go toward the purchase of 16mm equipment and videotape equipment for the workshop, which is partially supported by the New York State Council on the Arts. Anyway, that's Saturday, October 20th, from noon to 5 p.m. on West 25th Street between 8th and 9th Avenue. And if it rains, it's going to be moved up a week to Saturday, October 27th. This was Lesbian Nation. I'm Martha Shelley. Good night.